Welcome to Bitch Talk, booze and interviews straight from the heart of San Francisco. I'm Erin, that's Char. We are in studio. It's a cold Monday evening, but we have a very special guest in studio. His name is Chef. I know he hates that, but I'm saying it anyways. Chef to David Fu. Before we dive in, I just want to remind everyone you can find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com. You can also find us every Monday morning from 5:30 to 6 at BFF.fm. First of all, I watched Top Chef season 15. You were one of our favorites.
Thank you.
And I was so excited that you were from here.
Awesome.
And then fast forward to the day after Thanksgiving 2018, where my now fiance and I had just had a really fun day in North Beach. We started the day at Tony's Pizza with family. And maybe we were at the bar for a few hours, and then we wound up just cruising the streets of North Beach, kind of just drinking our way through and shopping for the holidays. And then we ended up at Sam's Burgers.
The best place you can end up.
Right? Yes. Yeah. And we were at the end of the counter, and I was like, oh, my God, I think that's Chef 2. And it was. Yep. And you were so kind and so nice. And I'm like, you really need to be on my podcast, please. And now here we are. You're later. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, mad love to you, Erin. I tell you this for those who aren't in the Bay Area, but in the Bay Area, it's like if you give love, you get love, and vice versa. Erin was super nice and kind. She exuded good vibes. It was genuine. It was like 1,000%. No question about it. So for those people who put that out for me and for the Bay Area, wherever you're at, you know, I reciprocate that 1,000%. And
yeah.
It doesn't matter. That's a universal rule. No matter where you go, you give respect, you get respect. So,
well, you had just come off of being on like Channel 7 or something for the for a Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah,
or
it was super random. My homie Dion Lim, she's a ABC 7 news anchor. Shout out to Dion Lim, grinding and hustling all day.
That's right.
TV, brand new book coming out.
That's right.
Get at her.
Yeah, she just had her not opening, but a book release, right?
That's right. Yeah. Like a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So mad props to her. Shout out to her. She invited me on to promote my my TV show that I had on ABC in 2018, a holiday special called Chef's Given.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after being in the newsroom, getting all nervous and all that stuff, being on live TV, I looked at Gene and said, we need to go get a burger.
Who's Gene?
So Gene's my spouse, my beautiful, beautiful spouse.
Uh-huh.
We've been together for about 3 years now, and it's only 3 of infinite years.
Yeah.
I love you, babe. And then shout out to Jean. She makes kimchi, by the way, as well, too. So
I just followed her today on Instagram.
Yeah,
so
check
I'm all
us
about
out.
It.
Yeah, check us out on Instagram. She's at Kimchi Genius. And I'm at Chef 2 David Fu. So
I want to talk about first, before we even talk about Top Chef, that can be later. But
absolutely.
Can you talk about your origin story and your relationship with food?
Absolutely. So I'm a first generation Vietnamese American from Oakland native. My parents are from Vietnam, and I grew up in West Oakland. I came from a place where food wasn't easily accessible, specifically, meaning I grew up in a food desert. Mm. However, interestingly so, my mom had a amazing relationship with food. With our limited resources, she's always committed to having some sort of garden or plant in our underdeveloped places that we lived. And by doing so, she has translated that relationship with food to me. And I credit a lot to her and my dad as well to the successful career chef that I am.
Mm.
So thank you, Mom and Dad. Mad love to you guys.
Is it correct? Is your dad a fishmonger?
Yeah. So my mom, both my parents are laborers. They've been working very hard all their lives.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is a 30-year seamstress, now retired.
Mm.
And my dad is the same. He's a 30-year fishmonger. Yeah, and I'm very glad to say that my sister and I together are very proud that we can both retire them. So.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what your aha moment was for you to really concentrate and tell stories about the food of your family and people.
Absolutely. I think it was an interesting interesting aha moment. And I think I came across it because I had a lot of trouble understanding what Western food was. And Western food, I'm saying like white people food.
Mm-hmm. You can be honest here. You're a bitch.
French.
Talk.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I was trained. I went to culinary school, learned a lot about French and Italian cooking. And even though I felt like I did it well, I worked for some pretty prestigious restaurants. At least, you know, that's what people say or call them.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer to leave them nameless.
Okay.
But I didn't. Even though I cooked the food well, I don't think I understood it. You know, like if you showed me something, I could replicate it. I can make it taste exactly the way or close to exactly the way it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I never understood the origins of it, the sensibilities of it. So, for example, you give me spaghetti bolognese. I could do it. And my only reference point is the chef that taught me how to cook it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no like cultural lineage or emotional excitement, at least for me, on why that dish was so exciting. Because the way that chef taught me how to cook spaghetti bolognese, opposed to using salt, I would have used fish sauce.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Opposed to adding more onions, I probably would add tofu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the noodles. You know, I probably would have used a different type of noodle, you know? So, and opposed to adding butter, I probably wouldn't add butter at all.
Right.
So those were the things that I wasn't getting. I understood it, but I truly, deeply didn't, I couldn't connect.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had that trouble in connecting and understanding food, it always brought me back to cooking the food that my mom and my father cooked for me. And just let me stop it there. I just want to be very clear that food is all speculative. Like, what tastes delicious, you're taught to understand what tastes delicious. So, for example, my mom taught me to love bitter, like bitter herbs like basil, rosemary, parsley, mint, all those bitter herbs. I loved it. I eat it like an ox eats grass.
Mm-hmm.
However, other people don't like that. Like skins in a bitter melon. I love it.
Mm.
My mom taught me to love that. However, like in a French kitchen, they say peel your cucumbers because it's bitter. So I had an understanding. I had a different perspective on what I appreciate about food in comparison to another culture. And after about 15 years in cooking in commercial kitchens and chefs and cooking in New York and here in the West Coast, it came back full circle to cooking with my parents because that's what I missed the most.
Mm.
And I just kind of went with what was in my blood, what was in my DNA on what I thought the ways things should be seasoned. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, like opposed to grabbing salt, I'll grab fish sauce.
Yeah.
So stuff like that.
So you were moving, you moved from the West Coast to the East Coast and then East Coast back to West Coast.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And during that time when you came back, that's when it was kind of like, what am I doing? I should go back to my roots.
I think when I came back to the West Coast, I worked for a restaurant that, an amazing restaurant in the East Bay,
mm-hmm.
That was very progressive.
Mm.
Everything was organic. And that was like the first real time that I had free realms to kind of put full contribution into the menu. And by doing so, I naturally kind of reached down to my own roots to cook the food that I wanted to cook. But for some reason, by doing so, me cooking Vietnamese food was very conflicting with their California-style cuisine.
Right.
And it was a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think me as a younger chef then, I got really pissed off.
Yeah, that happens.
Because someone's telling me I can't be me.
Yeah.
And it took for someone to tell me that I couldn't be me. And respect to them, it's their business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had no business in trying to change them into something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's their business, it's their money, it's their risk, all that stuff. But it took someone to tell me that I couldn't be me for me to dive into exploring what my native tongue is, my native palate, my the story of my family and why we eat the foods that we eat. And, you know, it opened up this whole Pandora's box of things that, in stories that my family and my parents that I never knew of. For, you know, just FYI, my parents are Vietnamese immigrants. They're from Phu Quoc Island.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most southern tip you can go. And being in that region themselves, they were a part of two wars, let alone one.
Wow.
So it's, people call it the Vietnam War. I call it the Vietnam and American War because mm-hmm. there was more than one war in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the second war was, there was a Vietnam and Cambodia war where the Khmer Rouge tried to encroach in the most southern region of Vietnam to reclaim, quote unquote, Cambodian territory.
Mm-hmm.
But them experiencing both, they have massive PTSD.
Mm.
And the conversations about their history and our family stories, expressing love and all that stuff. And I'm pretty sure a lot of other first, second, third generation boat kids can relate as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
But those stories were never had. And those stories were revisited because I was cooking with my parents.
Good.
You know, no, mm-hmm. you know, the interesting thing was that when they would when they would introduce a recipe, it wasn't like a recipe that's introduced on Food Network where
right.
I'm doing Sicilian pasta today and like Sicilian pasta is from this region and these people. Because of war, my parents ended up in a lot of different places. I think one of the first places they landed was Thailand. And one of my favorite dishes they cooked growing up was my mom and dad would make pad thai.
Mm.
And I never knew as a kid that pad thai was a Thai thing.
Right.
Because they would just make it. They didn't call it pad thai. They called it food. Like, here, eat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm a five-year-old. Like, five-year-olds in the 90s aren't like five-year-olds in like 2019.
Right. No.
You know, kids are like competing and cooking.
Yeah. It's crazy.
But I knew it was delicious. So I revisited those conversations with my parents. I'm like, why are we cooking pad thai?
Mm-hmm.
And then the stories about them being in a refugee camp and the struggles and how they ended up there just kind of naturally came about.
Wow.
So it was this beautiful accident that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that the universe gave me this beautiful gift of trials and tribulations to get to this point where I was able to find out more about myself, more about my parents, and more about, I think in learning about myself and learning about my parents, I was able to, it helped me have perspective about the world. And I'm forever grateful for that period of my life. So,
and how do your family and how do your parents feel about your new trajectory and where you're going with food and celebrity and hey, I mean, it is a part of being a Top Chef alumni a little bit.
Check this out, right? I told my dad didn't know what Top Chef was.
Right.
Whatever, right? I told my dad I was going to be on Top Chef. You know what he said? He's like, you're going to get a check from that?
Exactly. I was about to say, he's going to ask how much you got paid. Yeah. Yep.
You know, and I don't know about other families, but in my Vietnamese family, fame don't mean shit.
Yeah. Not unless there's some zeros behind it.
Not unless there's some zeros about it. But
yeah.
I think if anything, I think my parents' proudest moment was a moment where an opportunity where I was doing some documentary filming for a project for CamFest and they were able to watch it. I think in that moment they were their most proudest because it wasn't about money. It wasn't about fame. I think it was more so that in that moment, I could see in their eyes, in their tears, that they understood, that I understood their struggles and everything they sacrificed for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the most important thing, more than anything. I mean, generically so, all parents want their kids to be doctors and make millions or whatever, right?
Right. I think so.
I think so. But I think in that...
Immigrant parents, for sure.
Immigrant parents. But I think in that moment, there was something that my parents, that specific thing overwhelmed my parents with joy, I think.
You know? You're kind of, I don't know, you're cracking that shell of and we're all Asian here, some version of Asian.
Yeah.
And we just don't talk about things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. you don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And
because it's painful.
It's painful. Right. And they don't want to go there. And you're really lucky. I have to tell you, I lost my father in 2007 and we never had those conversations. And now I'm like, mm-hmm. damn it, I have to go back and ask different family members about different things and how, you know, his parents ended up here in Chinatown in the early 1900s. Like, it's a thing. So you're doing the work.
You did your due diligence, which is I applaud you for that. And it takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? Sometimes it's not intentional as well, too. My father, most amazing, intelligent man that I know, but my father was illiterate for the longest time.
Mm.
I think my mom didn't know he couldn't read.
Wow.
Up until they escaped Vietnam and they ended up in a refugee camp in Thailand. And the officers there asked my dad to write his own name and he couldn't do it. You know, my parents came, especially my dad, came from a very rural place. Mm-hmm. Like, they were super fucking poor.
Mm-hmm.
Especially my dad's side of the family, because he was working ever since he was like, what, 10 years old?
Yeah. Maybe younger.
But in that, you know, I applaud the amazing man that he has become to raise two kids and have a son that's on Top Chef and have a daughter
yeah.
that runs HR and healthcare, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it's an amazing story. And living in Oakland. but consider this is that, and I think we want to always think of our parents as absolutely our heroes and our champions, but I think there's always opportunities to withhold from that sometimes and look at our parents as actual people, because our parents do make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's opportunities for us to save our parents as well, too,
mm-hmm.
you know, and vice versa. My father didn't come to the realization that my grandfather died from Agent Orange until recent conversations in this past 2 years about my grandfather. So my grandfather, the story of my grandfather was, ever since I was little, everyone said that he passed away because he worked too hard.
Okay. That was the story.
Mm-hmm. And no one ever knew why he passed away. I would go back to Vietnam like every year and ask my aunties about it all the time. They said they didn't know. He just passed away because he worked too hard.
Mm-hmm.
But as we start to, as the years progress and as I get older, as we piece the stories together, we start to understand that it was Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like Agent Orange in the Vietnamese community, that conversation wasn't public knowledge up until like the past decade. Because no one in the Vietnamese diaspora space talked about Agent Orange
right.
at all.
Right.
It was just a thing, mm-hmm. you know, and then it wasn't until people, Ken Burns started to have a documentary about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't in the news anywhere. They wouldn't talk about it on Vietnamese news channel. It was like this secret.
It just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you move on.
So the story is my father's about 10 or 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's logging. I guess he was sick that year. He was sick that day. And his little brother went with my grandpa. They were up in the hills. And a plane flies by and sprays Agent Orange
yep.
all over the fields.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets sprayed with it. And he jumps into the river to rinse himself off for about 12 hours because it's burning.
Yes, yeah.
And he dies like within a few days.
Mm.
And I think for their understanding in that village at that time, in that moment, in that year, in that decade, in that era, they couldn't connect the two pieces that something that you can spray on you could kill you.
Right.
You know, they didn't mm-hmm. know what it was.
Right.
And it wasn't until years and years later of piecing things together that my dad finally realized that was Agent Orange. Because, you know, over the course of years, he gets informed as well, too,
mm-hmm.
about what happened in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And it came across in a very casual conversation while we were driving in a car.
Yep. That's how it happens sometimes.
That's how it usually happens.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. It's that I think if you don't know who you are, and this is for everyone who's immigrant and non-immigrant, I can guarantee you if you don't know who you are, you don't know your own history, it immediately leads to self-shame. Because you don't know why you exist. You don't know your story. You don't know your contribution. You don't know what legacy you're continuing. And oftentimes, like myself and friends alike, because I didn't know who I was, it led me astray to do other things.
Mm.
If it wasn't crime, it wasn't being bad, it was falling in love with another culture.
Right.
And I think I love hip hop, but I think for me, hip hop was that void for me. And I think a lot of other Asian American kids as well, too,
mm-hmm.
was that we fell in love with hip hop is because we didn't know. We had this complete void of who we were.
I grew up in San Leandro. I'm a little older than you, but
Dro Town.
But yeah, I grew up in the age of hip hop, and I loved hip hop,
right.
and my co-host too. And it was kind of the most identifiable thing,
yeah.
like closest to who we were and what we look like. And
absolutely.
Now looking back on it, it's like, well, it's because there was a void.
There was a huge void.
There was no Asian American Asians in general that had any kind of careers or that we got to see on TV or look like us. So that was, I don't know, that was the closest thing.
You're right. Hip-hop gave us culture. Hip-hop gave us language to speak.
Yeah.
You know, hip-hop gave us history. So.
Right.
So interesting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Dude. Yeah. Okay. shit. I swear.
I struck a nerve on that
No,
one.
I knew this was going to be a really, I don't want to say good, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but you're really heartfelt and I love it.
Oh,
like,
you
just...
So much.
Yeah,
you're
a genuine guy, and I like that. I am going to switch gears a little bit to Top Chef because that's the first time I ever saw you and knew about your story. But how did that change your life?
First of all, for those of you who don't know, every time I have an opportunity to speak publicly, I give a shout out to Fatih. Fatih is one of our co-chefs.
I had her, yep. Yep.
I have to put that first. One of our co-chefs that passed away this past year.
Yep.
You know, rest in peace to Fatih. And she was bound to be the next like Melissa King.
Mm.
And she never got to celebrate the success that she would have had from the show. Mainly due to cancer. And she found out she had cancer the day that the cast of Top Chef was announced nationally. So, you know, rest in peace to her. Love you, Fatih. We miss you.
It was, if you don't mind, I actually saw her on the Food Network, like, yeah. I think years before,
Chopped.
And, like, on Chopped. And I really liked her then. And when I saw that she was a part of that cast, I was like, rad, because I really enjoyed her story. So thank you for bringing her up, because she was in my notes. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
I love Fatih, and we all do. And, you know, if anything, I'd say I am blessed. We are all blessed to have her as a sister, her as a co-chef, a friend, to be a part of that with her. She has inspired us all, you know, just through the process of cancer and even through the show. I tell you this, she's the happiest person that I've ever seen or met in my life. And, you know, it made me reflect to appreciate and enjoy life. You know, because if you count all the negatives, there's always more negatives in life. But she truly, truly was probably the happiest soul I'll ever know. So, you know, rest in peace, Fatih.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you guys met on Top Chef and you guys seem like you had a really good family on that show.
We argue, we fought.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's family, right?
We argue, we fought on families. But till this day, I could say that... we all have great rapport, and we still connect. It's a little bit harder to connect with all the chefs.
Yeah,
there's
of course.
One in Alaska and Chicago, but
right.
You know, there's every few months we'll send a group text to each other and say what's up.
Good.
But I tell you this: the way this show affected us and me specifically, it changed my life. Just getting onto the show,
yep.
If you're cognizant of it, gives you an international, if not national. Exposure, your story can be told, and if you leverage it appropriately, it could change your life. But if you sit on your hands and don't do anything and mope because you didn't win, you're gonna miss out on a lot of opportunity. But I tell you something, you know, we from the Bay, you know,
yes,
I'm from Oakland,
yeah, yes,
so we
you
grind
are.
And hustle out here.
Well, I was gonna say you were hustling before Top Chef, and I feel
had
like
to.
You're hustling harder after Top Chef.
Had to, you know, like
yeah.
It's one of those things where I like to say this to my team. I like to say this to my homies and my colleagues and my homegirls and everything. Both homies is unisex. Don't get me wrong.
It is.
Right? Homies is unisex out here. But like a lot of my friends, I know what dirt tastes like. You know, when you know what dirt tastes like, you don't want to taste it again.
Mm.
So for me, every opportunity is an opportunity to guarantee for that day, for that month, for that week, whatever it is, for me not to taste dirt. So if I have a little extra, I'm gonna grind and hustle. Because I tell you this, man, the universe can only do so much for you. The universe gives you an opportunity, but you gotta for that opening window of opportunity, there could be 10 million other people in the world that wants that same spot. And you got to prove to your universe, let alone yourself, why you deserve that spot. And I'm telling you, I'm hungrier than most. I may not be the best, but I tell you, I'd be damned. I'm quote Will Smith here. I love Will Smith. Man of the year. Man of the century.
Right.
I'd be damned if anybody work harder than me. You know, so.
I mean, I feel like we can end it there. Drop the mic.
Right.
2020 is coming up.
Yep.
And you got a lot of projects on your plate.
Yep.
Tell us what's happening.
I think
without giving too many spoilers.
I think 2020. I think the 2000s, the 2010s is the year of the entrepreneur, and I think more than ever, it's been easier. Thank you, LegalZoom.
Yeah, no kidding.
To LLC and do your own things and to have access to. SBAs as well, too, Small Business Administration, to incorporate. And I think, you know, in my opportunities in this past few years, that's what I did. So I created three entities. One's a media, one's a brand, and the other ones I'm creating food products. So in 2020, I'll be as of now as well, too, but more so in 2020, you'll be able to see some grocery products that I create out of my own company. So
okay,
And that's further embellished with my healthy relationship with Whole Foods. So
awesome.
The second thing is, 3 years ago, I opened up a media company to do food media content. And at the moment, we have two TV series on the horizon. It's Oakland based. It's about community. It's about culture. But if you want more details, you guys got to follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I ain't saying nothing.
But fine, you know what? We don't have the exclusive, but
you know
sort
what?
Of.
Aaron got it, though.
Yeah.
Aaron got it.
Someone else told me, so that's all I'm going to say.
You know what? I'll give a little bit more because Aaron's such a cool homie. we're working on two series, the first of which is called First Kitchen. And it's a TV show, 30-minute series episode TV show. 12 episodes per series, about people's relationship with food, specifically taste. And it's in all different spectrums, all different perspectives. We go everywhere from prison to a farmer, to a chef, to mothers. And we're highlighting and giving people voice who usually don't have voice in the food industry. And in layman's terms, I think we're kind of tired of seeing, chefs, male, tell us all about food. So we're reversing the microphone.
Cool.
So the other one's called Try This, and it's about ingredients. And it's about de-exotifying ingredients, because I'm tired of seeing Asian ingredients in fine dining scenarios and setups.
Mm-hmm.
Because those ingredients don't come from a fine dining complex. It comes from mothers. It comes from fathers. And those are the ones, mothers, fathers, farmers, ranchers, whatever. And those are the people who bring the ingredients to our table. And I think they are the ones who should be storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Look out for both. We're going to be coming strong and hard. So,
dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're going to have you back on in 2020.
Awesome.
When everything is coming out. Maybe we can host something. I don't know. We'll help
you
something.
My verbal commitment to Bitch Podcast right now. Yeah. Like you guys will have the premiere.
Yeah. Cool. Well, us and Dion Lim. So awesome. It's fine. She's on ABC. So.
Shout out Dion.
Yeah. Give her that. Mm-hmm. I was going to say chef again, but I'm not going to.
It's all good.
Where can everyone find you?
You guys can find me in Oakland. Right now, I'm experimenting with food, and I'm doing it as a pop-up on 40th and Broadway. I do Bun Mini, which is a cross between a Bun Me and Panini. Nope, I don't want to hear your opinion about it. That's what I want to do. You want to have an opinion? Come through. Check it out. eat it, and then we can talk, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's Tuesday through Friday. And then on Saturdays, I do a chicken pho pop-up with pasture-raised chicken. You know, so we do it as clean, as best as we can do. We had our first chicken pho pop-up last Saturday, and it sold out in about an hour and a half.
Of course.
So come this Saturday, come early, check us out. We're at the Copper Spoon venue. That's on 40th and Broadway at 4031. We're right next door to Brenda's. You guys know where Brenda's at. I don't need to tell you guys.
No. Yeah. Everyone knows where Brenda's is. Mm-hmm. And then on the socials.
Come check me out. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all at chef2davidfood.com. And then if you guys want to see my website, content, videos, and all that stuff, recipes, go to www.chef2.com.
That's it. Thank you so much for being here.
Awesome. You're welcome.
That was my interview with 2 David Fu. He is an amazing person. I don't even know. Like, yes, he's a chef, but he's doing so much more.
He's got a very cool vibe.
Yes,
he's a sweetheart, and I'm really excited about going to Oakland now.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I'm serious about we need to have him back on the show, especially with Ange.
Well,
she's going to love him.
I'm guessing we had this conversation off the air because we started talking about recording from his pop-ups.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's totally up our alley.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm going to eat pho. Like, duh.
Yeah.
Whatever you want. Whatever you want to give us.
Pho that was so good that it sold out in an hour and a half.
Right. Yeah. He's making moves, but he's so thoughtful about it. That's why I like the guy. So he's a storyteller.
Yeah,
for sure.
No, for sure. To the point where, like, when we were saying that we're going to have him on more, that's no joke, because he was talking to us, and there were things that he was talking about and showing us awesome things beforehand.
Yep.
And
Char and I are like, don't talk about it. No, no, no. Save it.
For the air,
but he's just so, he's prolific.
It's the first time I've met him. And
right.
You've met him once before. So as most people, I'll yell at him and go, save it for the air. But right. I was just like, dude, but all the stuff that he was telling us was so interesting. So you wanted to keep listening.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, that'd be really good on the air. We should probably start recording.
So. Well, I wondered if you pressed, if you were just rolling a little bit, but.
I should have. I totally should have.
But there was stuff that he shared that. We wouldn't have been able to post. So
that's true.
Yeah,
very true.
But thank you so much to that was a great it's a great first episode and interview on Bitch Talk, and we will have you back again. Don't forget, you can find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com when you're looking up our 400 plus episodes, and you can also find us every Monday morning at bff.fm from 5:30 to 6. We are powered by GoTo Productions. Bitch, please.